The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Fight for Multi-Million Dollar Homes. If you think homes in the 300,000s and 400,000s are selling at an astronomical price in the Triangle, think again. It's now a whole new world for people looking for homes priced at the top end. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline, Through the Roof. Buyers of high-end homes in the Triangle are now having to dig a little deeper in their pockets, and it's up significantly in just the past year. Written by Cameron Snipes. It's no surprise that people are paying more for less these days and have been for a while now, but in the still red-hot world of residential real estate, it's eye-opening, to put it mildly, especially for luxury home buyers. Triangle Business Journal decided to take that a bit further and look at the microcosm of high-end home sales and see just how stark that realization has affected those buyers and made them dig further down those already deep pockets. The idea was to take high-end home sales data and show what big money gets now versus 5 years ago. The results show just how much pricing in the housing market has changed even in that short time frame. The cheapest home on the top 25 list 5 years ago was $1.97 million. This past year, it was $2.73 million. That means buyers had to shell out nearly 40% more just to get on the list. In fact, only two homes sold for more than $2.73 million from February 2017 to February 2018. While there were some outliers in the data, including a $7 million home on New Sharon Road in Rougemont in October 2020 that had been on and off the market for many years, that fetched exorbitant prices, the data suggests quite an uptick in what high-end clients are now willing to pay to get what they want. The outliers notwithstanding, the highest-priced home on the 2021 to 2022 list sold for $4.13 million. That's a 40% jump from the most expensive home sold in the Triangle 5 years ago. And at 6,520 square feet, it was nearly 1,000 square feet smaller. This past year in particular was a big one for the luxury market, and this year's pace is set to at least match that feat, says Bo Bromhall, a realtor at Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. The number of homes sold over $1.5 million went from 102 in 2019 to 122 in 2020, and an amazing 258 homes sold in 2021, says Bromhall. So far, we're on the same pace, 95 sales through the first quarter. Bromhall also points to the old real estate motto of location, 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 and high-end home buyers wanting to be in established, well-heeled neighborhoods. The growth of infill construction in North Hills, the Northridge area, and ITB and McGregor Downs signals a desire to be in an established neighborhood and closer to town, he says. Those buyers trade the larger lots of new subdivisions for location. The new $1.5 million subdivisions are well out in the country, in the county now. Existing homes are closer to town and in established communities. And these aren't old homes. The median age was 10 years old. And the rest of the article is actually a lot of graphs, so we'll read through as much of the data or the information as we can. First, we have a quote from real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. It's not about market value anymore. It's about whoever has the most money gets the house. About the data, data is based off the 25 most expensive home sales in the Triangle from the past 5 years. Figures were pulled from Triangle Multiple Listing Services and off-market sales by Bo Bromhall, a realtor at Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. Data is from February to February each year to coincide with TBJ publishing dates. And in a section called Did You Know? Of the top 20 residential sales minimum of $2.7 million in 2021, eight of them were truly cash deals, according to Bromhall. And first, there's a list of the most expensive homes sold in the Triangle ranked by sales price. Number one, 126 Hagwood Road in Zebulon, North Carolina, sale price $4,130,000. 6,520 total square footage of living area, not in a subdivision, closed July 28, 2021. Number two, 805 Pinehurst Drive in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 3.8 million, 7,970 square feet in the Oaks subdivision. Do not have a closing date on that one. 3712 St. Mark's Road in Durham, North Carolina is number three at 3.5 million, 9,582 square feet. No subdivision, closed April 5th, 2021. Tied at number three is 1034 Torrey Pines Place in Chapel Hill, 3.5 million, 9,500 square feet in the Oaks neighborhood, closed June 25, 2021. And number five on the list is also in the Oaks subdivision, 108 Donegal Drive in Chapel Hill, $3.445 million, 8,607 square feet, closed on June 7th, 2021. Coming in at number 25 on the list is 1421 Sky Vista Way in Raleigh, North Carolina, $2.73 million, 7,171 square feet. Southern Hills Estates is the subdivision, and it closed November 29th, 2021. And along with this listing, there's a box titled Closer Look. $76 million, the total amount of sales brought by the homes included on this year's list. 10, the number of homes on this year's list that sold for at least $3 million. Another section, million-dollar home sales boom in the Triangle. The number of million-dollar-plus home sales in the Triangle has exploded since 2020, with 2021 seeing well over double the number of seven-figure closings from the year before, according to Triangle Multiple Listing Services data compiled by Rich Realty Group. In 2018, the number of $1 million-plus sales was 294. Peaked in 2021 at 1,049, and for 2022 year-to-date, we're already at 297. Sought-after subdivisions. Here are the subdivisions that were the most prevalent on the top 25 most expensive home sales in the past 5 years. The largest portion of those sales, 26, were not in a subdivision. The top subdivision, Avalair, with 19. McGregor Downs, 10, The Oaks, 8, Southern Hills Estates, 7, The Hills of Rosemont, 7, Preston, 6, Country Club Hills, 5, and Northridge, 5. And average price per square footage. Here's a quick look at the price per square foot difference that buyers of high-end homes are paying now versus 5 years ago. In terms of overall average of top 25 home sales, buyers of high-end homes in the Triangle are paying 41.5% more per square foot now. For 2017 to 2018, it was $306.15 per square foot. For 2021 to 22, it is $433.07. And we have another quote from real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. It used to be 6 to 9 months, but with a house above seven figures, you're looking at least a year to a year and a half wait. People are paying 15 to 20% more for those houses now. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Selling More But Getting Less. Alpaca Peruvian chicken chain owners, siblings Ranbir and Ruby Bakshi, are working to overcome a new industry dynamic. Written by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. Measured by growth, Alpaca Peruvian charcoal chicken restaurants are a thriving success. 2022 sales are on track to top 2019, a nice recovery after the 35% drop from 2019 to 2020. And the group's 11th restaurant opened earlier this month in Knightdale on the heels of a Chapel Hill opening in March. Measured by core values, it's even more of a standout brand with a loyal following of customers from the entire Greater Triangle. Equally significant, Alpaca's retention of employees is enviable, with an in-house training program that positions prep cooks and cashiers to rise through the ranks and grow with the company. Over time, we've developed and empowered our staff, from dishwashers to our director of operations. We like to hire from within because they have experience with our culture and how we run a store, says Ranbir Bakshi, who, along with his sister, Ruby Bakshi, owns the restaurant chain. Most of the general managers in their stores have been with the company for years, and 70% of the management team are women. The preponderance of women in management is a totally organic phenomenon, explains Ruby Bakshi. We're not trying to fill a quota or anything. We give everyone the same fair chance. It's a very diverse and family-oriented culture. The siblings opened their first restaurant in 2007 with their mother, Nora Palma, who emigrated from El Salvador, and her husband, who hails from Peru. The Bakshi siblings grew up in Maryland, and after serving in the Army, Ranbir Bakshi attended L'Académie de Cuisine Culinary School in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Ruby Bakshi, an NC State University graduate, also attended culinary school before transferring to earn a business degree. As I was finishing up culinary school, my mom pitched the idea of opening a Peruvian chicken restaurant in North Carolina, Ranbir Bakshi says. She fell in love with the Triangle when she visited here and thought there was more opportunity here than in other cities to develop a restaurant business. This will be a really good opportunity for you. You will be managing people and not so much work. That's what she told me, Ranbir Bakshi says, laughing. That was not at all the case when we started. We did everything. The first two restaurants operated under the Mommy Nora's brand, which was rebranded to Alpaca in 2015. And the only remaining Mommy Nori's, located in Raleigh, was sold to new owners at that time. As the company has grown, the family focus and family commitment has not wavered. When we open a store, everyone is helping out any way they can. Ruby and my wife, Laura Yamas, are at the registers, and Ruby's husband, Geraldo Serrero, and I are in the kitchen. We want to give a good first impression, Ranbir Bakshi says. Although some employees resigned in the early days of the pandemic, the family connections and Alpaca culture enticed many to return. We have such a camaraderie in our stores and lots of support among the GMs. That trickles down to our staff, and that whole family dynamic has helped with the staffing aspect and employee retention, Ruby Bakshi says. In every store, there is some type of familial relationship among employees, maybe a cousin or aunt or grandma. Employees seasoned in Alpaca culture and core values make the best management. Some GMs have been with us 8 years or more, she explains. One of the ways the company supports its growth, particularly in a labor-strapped market, is to have GMs help train the next round of managers. We just promoted a young man who started as a prep cook about 5 years ago, was developed by another GM, and has now been promoted from GM to area manager, Ruby Bakshi says. The company is growing, careers are progressing, and sales are increasing, but there is one huge problem. Profits are declining dramatically. Sales are going up like 25% this year, but profits are not going up comparably because of the cost of labor, increasing prices across the board for food and supplies, and third-party delivery costs, Ranbir says. When 70% of our business is takeout and 10% of revenue is catering, a substantial amount is being paid to these third-party delivery companies. The questions the siblings ask, is it worth it? Does it really make sense to grow sales, work harder, and make significantly less money? For the Alpaca brand, the answer is yes. We've always done grassroots marketing and festivals, even if we're not making money, just to get the Alpaca name and brand out in the community, Ranbir explains. We know sometimes we'll take a hit, but the idea is that we take on these catering jobs at a loss in hopes more people will decide to come to our restaurants. After their catering business plummeted about 90% during COVID, the owners were excited when one of their pre-COVID corporate clients called them back for catering. But then they told us their company had implemented a rule that required all catering orders go through their approved vendor, Easy Cater, Ruby says. That forces us to work with Easy Cater, which takes about 20%, roughly the same commission as any other third party, but with Easy Cater, there is a catch. Other third-party vendors allow us to inflate prices to offset the cost, but with Easy Cater, the price has to match the price on the menu in our store, so it's a bigger loss for us. More than 86,000 restaurants are represented at Easy Cater, and over 206 million people have been served. Our catering business is back to about 50% of what it was pre-COVID, but if our profit margin is 20%, they just ate it, Ranbir says. Alpaca, which had a robust takeout business even before COVID, had already found a technology solution that didn't cut into profit margins. EatStax, an online ordering platform developed by Durham-based SAM IT Solutions, is a flat fee model that enables restaurants to grow their revenue without paying commission on the sales. Our restaurant partners pay a monthly fee of $99 and they can take an unlimited number of orders, says Samudra Vijay, president and CEO of SAM IT. EatStax has more than 200 restaurants using its platform and has processed more than 6,200 customer orders. Amid growth and seeming prosperity, the profits crunch has proved problematic on virtually every front of Alpaca's restaurant's operations. The new store opening in Knightdale was delayed several weeks, further eroding profits. There were supply chain issues with not being able to get the HVAC equipment, and that's why the Knightdale store was delayed, Rambeer says. We used to be able to build out in 6 months. Now it's 9 months, but you still have to start paying rent even without generating revenue. And we also have two news articles in the 52 Shades of Success section. VA announces Equity Action Plan, new task force. In an effort to eliminate barriers to healthcare, benefits and services, and striving to create opportunities that will improve access and experiences for historically marginalized veterans, the Department of Veterans Affairs released an Equity Action Plan on April 14. The plan sets forth goals to effectively incorporate equity across all veterans, regardless of race, gender, age, or socioeconomic status. This action plan follows the creation of an inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access Task Force in April 2021 that defined recommendations that would ensure equitable treatment and experiences for all VA employees, veterans, and their families and survivors. Among the recommendations, the current plan calls for the development of data to measure the equitable delivery of care and services. It asks for improved access for health care, benefits, and services, as well as seeks advanced outcomes in the areas of contracts awarded to minority, disadvantaged, and women-owned businesses. NCCU gets DOE grant. NC Central University received a $550,000 grant from the Department of Energy to support the creation of a two-year traineeship program. The objective of the program is to promote career paths that align with the DOE's mission. Muhammad Ahmed, interim associate dean for the NCCU College of Health and Sciences and a professor of physics, will lead the program. Professors from UNC Chapel Hill, NC State University, and Duke University will assist Ahmed and NCCU physics professors Diane Markoff and Caesar Jackson in teaching students in the traineeship program. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Historic Baldhead cottages now for sale. Three cottages that have stood on Baldhead Island since 1903 went up for sale April 15th, and there's no telling what the price will be. The cottages were built in 1903 for the keepers of the Cape Fear Lighthouse and their families and are referred to as Captain Charlie's Station after Charles Swan, the head keeper for 30 years. The Mitchell family, which developed Baldhead Island, has owned the cottages for the past 40 years and is selling the three in a package deal that includes 4.11 acres of real estate. The chance to purchase Captain Charlie's Station is truly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, says Trey Wallace, president of Intracoastal Realty, which is listing the property. Given the one-of-a-kind nature of these cottages, their iconic status, and historic significance, we felt that it was appropriate to let the market establish the value, says Chad Paul, CEO of Baldhead Island Limited. There really are no comps for a property this unique. A video displaying the property already has thousands of views, says Christy Golder, a marketing consultant for Baldhead Island Limited. Homes on the island can sell for millions, but a price for this is hard to predict as the owner's way offers. There's nothing like it on Baldhead Island or the East Coast, Golder says. At last, the hospitality industry has a reason to celebrate. After over 2 years of constant challenges, North Carolina's hospitality sector spent April 18 celebrating the work of its leaders in the industry. The North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association held its annual Stars of the Industry Awards at the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club. The organization recognized 20 people, including 10 from the Triangle, for their service, leadership, innovation, and dedication to the industry. Among the local recipients were Georgios Bakatsias, Restaurateur of the Year, Angus Barnes' Jim McGovern, Restaurant Manager of the Year, and Summit Hospitality Group's Ian Sauer, Lodging Operator of the Year. The ceremony was the biggest event the NCRLA has held since the start of the pandemic. The challenges keep coming, but our leaders in the hospitality industry continue to find ways to rise above it with their service and commitment to keep our businesses up and running, said Lynn Mingus, NCRLA President and CEO. We are so proud to recognize the hardworking men and women on the front lines that keep a smile on their face despite all they have overcome in the last few years. Durham workers see wages jump. Wages are steadily rising across the nation, but while salaries in Durham are jumping faster than the U.S. average, the Raleigh Metro is not keeping pace. Wages in Durham-Chapel Hill jumped 7.1% from February 2021 to February 2022, beating the national average of 5.7%, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau. The average Durham worker saw their weekly paycheck jump by about $71 to more than $1,068. But it was a different picture in Raleigh, where wages were up just 1.7%, an increase that amounts to about $19 more per check, to $1,136. The reason for the difference? Durham has relatively more blue-collar workers compared to Raleigh, and those workers saw wages jump the most, especially in the hospitality sector. Company hiring dozens in Tarboro. The town of Tarboro in eastern North Carolina is adding more jobs as LS Cable and System USA, a Korean manufacturer, plans to add 86 additional employees to its facility over the next 3 years. The $26.9 million expansion will add to the company's current manufacturing plant, which now employs 188 people, the company says. Former Sam's Club gets new life. In a sign of the demand for life sciences space in the Triangle, a defunct Sam's Club in Morrisville is about to have a new life. The Azure Group is gearing up to kick off construction on its portion of INQ 1101 on May 17. The new facility will feature 75,000 square feet of life sciences space for the company's subsidiary, Azure Clean Rooms On Demand, which provides ready-to-use clean rooms for startups and life sciences firms in need of the space. Construction is expected to wrap up by the first quarter of next year. Azure joins Schneider Electric USA's 65,000 square foot lease to bring the building to full capacity. And finally, dental school gets a big lift. The UNC Chapel Hill Adams School of Dentistry recently received a multi-million dollar gift that will establish an endowment fund. The university announced April 14 that a $5 million gift from Richard and Angela Workman will support leadership courses and professional development initiatives for students in the school's programs. The programs will become a permanent part of new school curriculum launched last year that includes training in person-centered care, effective decision-making, and behavioral sciences. Richard Workman graduated from Southern Illinois University and founded Heartland Dental in 1997. The company has grown to 1,600 offices across 38 states. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Fuquay Varina to update land use plan. Builders concerned about the impact on growth in the town. After years of explosive growth, the town of Fuquay Varina is redoing its land use plan to catch up with the times, and area builders say it's disrupting business. The town hopes to adopt its 2040 Community Vision land use plan this year to modernize the way it handles development and attract more commercial development. The plan is still in early draft form while the town solicits feedback from residents, developers, and the business community. Meanwhile, a number of builders with projects in town say the town has hit the brakes on new proposals since work on the land use plan started, but town officials say that's not the case. The builders, all of whom declined to be named for fear of losing future business in the town, each say they've seen a dramatic slowdown in movement on new projects in recent months. Assistant Town Manager Jim Seymour says the town has not stopped development but is trying to work with developers to shape projects to best meet the needs of the rapidly changing town. He says the town has not rejected or halted any projects because of the work on the land use plan, but that it has asked some builders to take more time to talk with town staff. We have asked our partners, our friends in the development community, to work with us. This goes back to wanting to get it right the first time, Seymour says. He says this mostly pertains to developers with high-density plans or other designs that were not envisioned in the current land use plan, and that many other plans continue to move forward. Suzanne Harris, the Vice President of Governmental Affairs at the Home Builders Association of Raleigh-Wake County, says her group has heard these concerns from its members and has reached out to the town. The issue is a complicated one involving the confluence of the implementation of a water sewer allocation policy, updates to the land use plan being in the works, and other concerns facing fast-growing communities such as traffic and the placement of density, Harris says. To our knowledge, no moratorium has been put into place, and no plan has been denied on the grounds of the LUP being updated. Sales brisk so far for new condos downtown. After years of work, the New York developer behind a downtown condo building overlooking Durham Central Park is eyeing a 2023 opening. Lambert Development recently held an event celebrating the topping out of the Vega, a seven-story, 57-unit condo building at 214 Hunt Street. There's no greener site in town. It's surrounded by three parks, says Henry Lambert, company founder. We know the neighborhood. We have the benefits of downtown Durham and one of the best sites. Lambert says buyers have already reserved 40 of the units in the building, and the company expects to wrap up construction on the first units by early next year. Unit prices range from $500,000 to more than $1 million as the market for high-end urban homes continues to explode in Durham and around the Triangle. The building will include a mix of one-, two-, and three-story bedroom units, and layouts will range in size from 900 to 2,300 square feet. Amenities at the building include a fitness room, third-floor club room, and an optional electric vehicle charging station per resident. New York developer eyes apartments, hotel, retail. A new stage of an ongoing development in Knightdale appears to be in the works after the New York developer behind the project filed new plans with the city last year and master plans in March. Late last month, Syracuse developer Wide Waters filed a master plan for Parkstone Dewitt mixed use, calling for hundreds of new apartments, a hotel, and commercial space. The project is situated on 14 acres at the corner of Parkstone Town and Knightdale Boulevards. Filings call for a total of 302 apartments, a 124-room hotel, and 12,495 square feet of commercial space, according to the town. The apartments would feature one, two, and three-bedroom apartments across five multifamily buildings. Nearly 400 apartments planned in Cary. More apartments are coming to fast-growing Cary. Earlier this month, Beechwood, Ohio developer, the Goldberg Companies Incorporated, filed plans for Legacy Cary, calling for 390 apartments across six multifamily buildings and a clubhouse. The project is situated on about 40 acres across a dozen parcels at the corner of Morrisville Parkway and the Interstate 540 on-ramp. And finally, we have a big number, 778. The maximum number of homes planned by Phoenix-based Suncrest Real Estate and Land in its latest plans for a residential development called Brio. The project is situated off Old Cruz Road north of Knightdale on a disjointed site totaling 268 acres across two unconnected assemblages. The land is owned by a collection of LLCs and individual landowners. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Affordable housing targeted for Sanford. Nonprofit gets boost from bank, plans more than 30 homes. A Sanford nonprofit recently landed a $500,000 investment that will help spur the construction of dozens of affordable homes in Lee County. The investment from Raleigh-based Dogwood State Bank will help Brick Capital Community Development Corporation build more than 30 affordable homes in Sanford, including homes within a major subdivision Brick Capital is planning to start construction on later this year. Because it is a five-year note, essentially we can revolve it over the next 5 years to build houses and sell houses, says Kerry Bashaw, executive director of Brick Capital. He says the conversation between the parties started about a year back as Brick Capital was looking for financing to build homes, a prospect that can be difficult for a nonprofit that develops affordable housing. The traditional ways of going to banks or other funding vehicles weren't working. That's when the nonprofit researched impact investing and connected with Cape Fear Collective in Wilmington. What started as calls for advice eventually formed into a partnership. The $500,000 investment is a joint venture between the three firms. Bashaw says Brick Capital sells their homes for about 20% below market value, as a lot of the land the organization builds upon is donated. Brick Capital is getting ready to start construction on a new subdivision along Washington Avenue that will bring 45 single-family homes and 16 apartment units to Sanford. Some of the homes in this project will be built with the investment from Dogwood. Bashaw wants to attract more investors to spur development of affordable homes. Could an investor go somewhere else and get a better rate of return on investment? Absolutely, but are they going to get a better social impact on their return? No. He says. Former Aberdeen school could become new homes, apartments, retail. The town of Aberdeen is seeking to rezone former school grounds into a housing community that will include up to 40 single-family homes and 36 multifamily units. Usually, a developer is the one submitting an application to the town, but the application for the project, being called Aberdeen Station, is from the town of Aberdeen itself. The town recently purchased the land. The town is slated to hold a public hearing on Aberdeen Station April 25. With the rate of growth the town has seen, along with some interested parties, it was clear the property would be redeveloped, the town says in its application materials. Without the town of Aberdeen's purchase of the property, the highest bidder would quite literally be up for grabs, and development plans may or may not be in the town's best interest. AutoZone pays $1 million for Clayton land. An auto parts retailer could be eyeing a new location in Johnston County. AutoZone purchased 1.28 acres in Clayton for $1 million, according to a deed filed April 1. The land sits next to the new Publix grocery store as part of the Flowers Plantation Master Plan community at the intersection of NC Highway 42 and Flowers Parkway. It's unclear what the development timeline is for the land, as AutoZone did not respond to multiple requests for comment. And we have a quote from Smithfield Council member David Barber when discussing a proposed 50-unit apartment complex in downtown Smithfield. The town council denied the rezoning request. "I'm so confused when I see these types of projects come to us. No offense to their project. I think it's a great project. Not here. It's a business area. I just don't like it." And finally, a big number, 37. The number of jobs CertainTeed is adding in Oxford via a $118 million expansion. The company manufactures building products. And now we turn to the On Retail Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. New barbecue joint finally nears debut. Raleigh restaurant faced multiple hurdles before its launch. Plagued by delays, a Raleigh food truck-turned-restaurant finally has an opening date. And what co-owner Adam Cunningham called a nightmare, Longleaf Swine has faced supply chain issues, rising costs of goods, and challenges procuring a bank loan over the past few years. In August, the restaurant will open after over a year of getting by through pop-ups and catering. The 1,800-square-foot restaurant is located at 300 East Edenton Street. Longleaf Swine won't specialize in any one type of barbecue, but will offer all kinds and styles. Cunningham, an Eastern North Carolina native, favors that style, but will include Texas brisket, smoked chicken, and beef ribs. The restaurant will also serve smash burgers, pastries, and coffee. "We want to be a nice neighborhood hangout where everyone feels comfortable coming in," he says. "Even if you're vegan or vegetarian, we'll have plenty of offerings for that as well." Longleaf Swine began as a food truck from Cunningham and business partner Mark Russell in 2017. In early 2019, the pair signed a lease at Transfer Company Food Hall in Raleigh as a natural next step, Cunningham says. With no outside investors, they spent several months trying to secure a commercial loan and were met with hesitancy. After the pandemic hit, the team left Transfer Company and looked for options. Ben Davis, a broker at Monarch Realty, joined as part owner in the fall of 2020 to aid with the business and real estate side of the concept. The team landed on the space of the former Oakwood Cafe, which closed amid the pandemic. An LLC registered to Davis purchased the 0.15-acre property in November 2021 for $790,000. While the renovation faced delays from supply chain issues, Longleaf Swine began doing pop-ups at establishments in Raleigh and local deliveries. Construction ramped up in February, setting the restaurant up for a summer opening. The renovation has cost the team a little more than $500,000, Cunningham says. Shuttered hotel to become apartments. A struggling Raleigh hotel has been sold to a California buyer and will be turned into apartments. The Hyatt Place North Raleigh Midtown Hotel, which has 127 rooms and is located across from Duke Raleigh Hospital, sold recently for $18 million to Magma Equities. The renovated space will hold 128 units with rent starting at less than $1,200. With the rapid growth of North Hills and Midtown, rental rates are pushing to historic highs, says Ryan Hall, managing principal at Magma Equities. We are targeting to provide a lower cost option for the residents that want to live close to their employment while having a newly renovated unit and first class amenities. The 2.87 acre property was sold by Vivek Tandon, a Fayetteville real estate investor who purchased the hotel in 2018 for $12.9 million. LS3P adds Greensboro, Asheville. LS3P, the firm with the most registered architects in the Triangle, is adding Asheville and Greensboro to its list of markets. The firm has closed on its sixth and seventh mergers by acquiring TFF Architects and Planners and PFA Architects. LS3P now has 11 markets, including Charlotte and Wilmington. The new deals net the company 26 employees, bringing its total to over 400. The 64-person Raleigh outfit has worked with Greensboro's TFF Architects and Planners on healthcare and education projects. The Raleigh office brought in $18.6 million in revenue in 2021. The company recorded $98.8 million in revenue in 2021. The Raleigh market has 64 employees, 30 registered architects, and had $18.6 million in revenue for 2021. And in a section called He Said It, the quote is from Dan Sacklad, who owns Carey Cooking Store Whisk with his wife Diana. Whisk will close for good June 11th. Business has been going great. Our last 2 years have been the best ever. We really wanted to go out on top on our terms. And finally, a notable number or year, 1974. That's the year that R.B. Fitch and his wife Jenny began Farrington Village, a community now featuring a luxury inn, residential homes, an award-winning restaurant, and boutique retail. R.B. Fitch was recently awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award from the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association. And now we turn to the On Tech and Banking page written by Lauren Onasorge. Startups get boost from hot housing market. As housing prices rise to unprecedented levels in the Triangle, many homeowners have elected to improve their current dwellings instead of fronting the cash for higher mortgages, a trend that's benefiting entrepreneurs in a big way. From home inspections to maintenance to even toys, the high demand in the real estate market means opportunities for many. Here are four area startups working to capitalize on the challenge. HomeCloud, headquarters in Durham, employee 6, currently hiring. HomeCloud is building what CEO George Kirkland calls a modern take on the home inspection, perhaps uniquely positioned to capitalize as homebuyers opt out of official inspections amid intense bidding wars. We can tell them if there are any major concerns, he says. Exhale, headquartered in Raleigh, 12 employees and currently hiring. The member-supported company aims to proactively care for homes by putting home maintenance on autopilot, essentially mitigating issues before they arise. We're not only a maintenance company, we're also an on-demand, almost general contractor for our members, CEO Matt Sheehan says. Second Nature, also headquartered in Raleigh, 275 employees, currently hiring. Thad Tarkington, co-founder of Raleigh-based Second Nature, formerly FilterEasy, says housing trends have boosted demand for the firm's business-to-business product, B2B product, its resident experience platform targeted at property managers. We see a market that's growing rapidly, and we see a lot of long-term interest, he says. And finally, Tiny Earth Toys, headquartered in Durham. Employees 9, including 2 who are part-time, and they are currently hiring. Rachel Classy, CEO of Tiny Earth Toys, is seeing the demand for rental housing boost business in the long term. People in smaller dwellings put space at a premium, she says. You can remove a lot of stress of clutter in your home by renting instead of owning, she says. Bank growing Triangle presence hikes minimum pay. A bank that's rapidly expanding its Triangle presence is hiking its minimum wage, a move that one analyst says will become the new industry norm. Fifth Third Bancorp announced plans to raise its minimum wage from $18 to $20 an hour starting July 4. Fifth Third is not alone, as a slew of banks have announced wage hikes in recent months. In March, First Horizon Corporation, which is being bought out by TD Bank, announced plans to raise its minimum wage from $15 to $18 an hour. And last year, Charlotte-based Bank of America raised its minimum wage in the U.S. to $21, part of a larger pledge to reach $25 an hour by 2025. Chris Marinak, director of research for Janie Montgomery Scott, suspects most large banks will make similar moves over time. Perhaps not all this month or quarter, but over time, hourly wages should rise further, Marinak says. Preston Bergen, Fifth Third's market president for the Triangle and Triad, says the move gives the bank an extra sweetener to compete for talent. It's a very competitive employment market, and we have to have strong value proposition to all of our team members, he says. Chapel Hill investor targets deep tech deals. A stealthy Chapel Hill investor with SpaceX in its portfolio is looking for deals in deep tech. Champion Hill Ventures has yet to raise a dollar, but has targeted $30 million for its latest fund, according to a securities filing. Founder Josh Manchester says the firm has a bias toward deep tech when it comes to investing. We like things that have a defense component to the business side, he says. We also do things we call curveballs, which just don't look like anything else but have the potential to be large companies. Right now, there are no local startups in its portfolio, but Manchester says the firm is open to opportunities in the Triangle. And finally, we have a big number, $4.6 billion. That's how much Raleigh-based Coastal Federal Credit Union has in assets after steady growth under CEO Chuck Purvis, who was Triangle Business Journal's Business Person of the Year in 2016. Purvis, who took over in 2012 after the retirement of Larry Wilson, is retiring next year. And finally, EV maker weighs manufacturing options. In September, INEOS Automotive, part of the British multinational chemical giant INEOS Group, announced plans to house its North American commercial operations in Raleigh. Greg Clark, Executive Vice President of Americas for INEOS, says the company is considering bringing manufacturing to the U.S. Asked if North Carolina would be on the site selection shortlist, Clark says, absolutely. It makes sense for us to look at local manufacturing here, he says of the U.S. We haven't made a decision on that, but it's something we're studying for the next few years. And there's a related column in the Viewpoint section, so we'll now turn to the editor's notebook. Written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, EV recruitment efforts need to reach hyperspeed. Watching Volkswagen Group CEO Herbert Diess talk about the German car company and where it wants to go in the future with electric vehicles made me wonder if every CEO and their board are now having the same conversation every day. Diess wants Volkswagen to make electric versions of all of its brands, and there are many. Because Volkswagen doesn't just make Volkswagens, it also makes high-end Audi and Porsche, supercar Lamborghini, luxury Bentley, and even Ducati motorcycles, at least 100 models in all, including several electric cars, reporter Leslie Stahl stated on the CBS show 60 Minutes on April 17. Diess added that this is part of the plan to eventually have the company focused on renewable energy, and therein lies the opportunity for North Carolina. While the state's economic development officials acknowledge that recent wins, such as Toyota Motor Corporation's EV battery plant in Randolph County and Vietnamese EV car maker VinFast's desire to build a car plant in Chatham County, have given the state officials a new arsenal to pitch the Tar Heel State to recruit other companies, the message may sound very familiar to ones in Texas, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. I am more convinced now than ever that innovation and modern architecture in the automotive industry already have found their home in the EV segment. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reports that electric vehicles and hybrids now make up about 11% of all light-duty vehicle sales in the U.S. Gasoline and diesel-fueled engines will have their purpose, but for the American consumer, hybrid and all-electric vehicles will be the go-to choice. And yet, the infrastructure around EVs is hardly adequate. Electric car charging stations are still few and far between, especially when one travels outside a metro. Battery longevity is an issue. Ingredients to make high-efficiency batteries, such as nickel, are mired in supply chain issues. And states have enacted archaic auto sale laws to prevent electric car makers, such as Tesla Motors, from selling to the public directly. All that will change soon, and smart businesses are about to get very rich. How can a business tap into this game-changing trend in the auto industry? Here are a few options. Civil engineers can work with gas station owners to design electric charging stations on their property, a new line of business. Design of charging stations will go through a huge change. After losing millions of dollars on its charging stations, big oil companies such as BP are now reporting that the stations are getting close to delivering the same margins the company earns from pumping gas. The entrepreneurial investment community should lure the smart minds in the state to come up with alternatives to the traditional battery used in EVs. This is going to be a huge play. Already, Japan and South Korea are creating an infrastructure around artificial intelligence. To make it easier on investors and entrepreneurs, North Carolina could set up new tax credits and other incentives to lure businesses to this state. Owners of large tracts of rural land should start looking into some of the recent EV plants in Norway and Sweden and ascertain the critical infrastructure that may attract smaller automakers. Innovation is going to unleash a new line of car makers that have not been incorporated yet. These are exciting times. The EV industry will offer almost all businesses an opportunity to expand, pivot, and replace their lines of business. Those who come out of the gate first will be the big winners of these sweepstakes. And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. German firm to open facility in Knightdale. Optima seeks spot near region's booming pharma industry. A German packaging company is opening a facility in Knightdale to be closer to the Triangle's booming pharma industry. Optima has four business units, one of which focuses on the pharma industry and offers machine solutions for packaging products, such as filling liquid medications into vials and syringes. The company already has sales and service personnel in North Carolina, but last year decided to build a physical location to be closer to its customers in the Triangle. Optima operates subsidiaries around the world, including its U.S. office called Optima Machinery Corporation that is based in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and has been in operation for nearly 40 years. The service hub the company is opening in Knightdale sometime in the middle of this year will be its second physical location in the U.S. The new service hub will bring us even closer to our customers and allow us to provide faster service along with enhanced spare parts availability, says Ulrich Unteriker, managing director of the Optima Machinery Corporation. Opening a facility near Raleigh will provide a hub for service and support personnel and a place where the company can meet with customers. The site will also stock spare machine parts, which will allow the company to react quicker to nearby customers, Unteriker says. The company plans to increase its number of employees in the Triangle and throughout the U.S. Optima, the parent company, employs more than 2,650 people, mostly based in Germany, according to its April 2021 annual report. Additionally, the report said its consolidated revenue in 2020 was more than 420 million euros, around $450 million. Optima is one of a number of pharma or biotech service providers moving into or expanding in the Triangle. In December, Canada's MISPRO Biotech Services announced it plans to build a 6,000-square-foot facility in Research Triangle Park. Last month, the Florida-based biomedical firm CryoCell International unveiled its plans to continue growing its Triangle presence with a 56,000-square-foot facility in Durham. Your grocery bill may jump as bird flu spreads in North Carolina. Chicken and egg prices are rising as the U.S. deals with the worst avian flu outbreak in 7 years. And North Carolina's billion-dollar poultry industry is taking a major hit. The virus has been detected in more than 25 states and has affected more than 27 million birds. As of April 12, nearly 500,000 birds at 9 commercial flocks in North Carolina had been euthanized as part of a safety measure, according to numbers from the North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Chicken and egg prices were already high due to inflation before the virus began to spread, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture said the outbreak could contribute to more price increases. In its March, the department predicted poultry prices to increase between 6% to 7%, and egg prices to jump 2.5% to 3.5% this year. Further spread of the virus could be damaging to the state's poultry industry and broader economy, says Jay Boyette, Commodities Director for the North Carolina Farm Bureau. About two-thirds of the state's agriculture industry, which generated $10 billion in cash receipts in 2020, is comprised of livestock, dairy, and poultry operations. Despite dispute, Liquidia opens $50 million offering. Morrisville's Liquidia Corporation is holding a public offering to help develop a treatment involved in a patent dispute. Liquidia is offering about 9.8 million shares of common stock at a price of $5.10 per share, with total gross proceeds of about $50 million. In a filing, Liquidia said it intends to use the proceeds for ongoing development of Yutrepia, a treatment for pulmonary arterial hypertension. In November, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted tentative approval of Yutrepia, but it cannot yet be marketed in the U.S. due to a regulatory stay. In 2020, United Therapeutics sued Liquidia for alleged patent infringement. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Abzena CEO Jonathan Goldman on the company's recent $65 million raise, which it completed as it prepares to open a biologics manufacturing facility in Sanford. The facility, which will support 325 jobs, is expected to open in the fourth quarter. This new capital will allow us to develop and manufacture a greater number of novel treatments for more patients. And finally, a big number, $15.1 million. The amount Raleigh's Contigo Medical raised in equity from 11 investors. The medical device company is aiming to raise another $2.4 million, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read some of the general news stories. First, headline, Truist touts progress. Analysts see concerns. Truist CEO on how bank is shifting focus from post-merger integration. Written by Caroline Hudson of the Charlotte Business Journal. Truist Financial Corporation is at an inflection point, shifting from post-merger integration to a united operation competing for market share. I can feel it, CEO Bill Rogers said on April 19th's investor call. The foot is on the accelerator, not the brake, and I totally feel that in the transition that we're making at this particular juncture, and I'm very confident about our positioning for the future. Truist is reaching the final stages of integration, in which it will decommission more than 900 business applications and three data centers, Chief Financial Officer Daryl Bible said. That will accelerate savings, with $400 million to $500 million in savings expected later this year, he said. Executives say Truist is on track to meet its promised $1.6 billion in merger-related net cost savings. It had closed 822 total branches as of the first quarter and reduced third-party spending by nearly 12%. The bank reached 5 million square feet in non-branch space reduction, and average full-time positions had decreased by about 14% as of the first quarter. Truist posted net income available to shareholders of $1.327 billion or 99 cents per diluted share for the first quarter. Revenue decreased 3% year over year to $5.33 billion. But Wells Fargo Securities analyst Mike Mayo questioned executives' plans for future growth, referring to the bank as having superior features but average results. He likened it to a Corvette traveling at 60 miles an hour. Fee income was less than expected in the first quarter. Mortgage income was down 44% from the prior quarter. And Truist also saw declines in auto, student loans, and home equity. Net interest income declined nearly 2% from the fourth quarter and 3% from a year ago. The expectation is for net income interest to grow throughout the year, Bible said, responding to Morgan Stanley analyst Betsy Grasek. Syngenta expands an RTP with $18 million research facility, written by Zach Ezone. A Swiss ag tech is expanding its study of insects in Research Triangle Park with an $18 million investment. Syngenta is adding an insectary to the 336,000-square-foot campus the company opened on Davis Drive in 2017. The 13,000-square-foot addition will provide a controlled space for the company's scientists to research economically important pests that can be devastating for agriculture markets around the world. The company's campus in RTP is the Global Research and Development Center for Syngenta Seeds, which is one of four business units that makes up the Syngenta Group. The company's North American headquarters for its crop protection unit is in Greensboro. We believe this new facility will play an important role in our ongoing efforts to help farmers around the world better protect their crops and support global food security, says Ian Jepson, site lead of the company's RTP Global Innovation Center. Syngenta held a groundbreaking ceremony April 19 to mark the beginning of construction on the site. The work is slated to finish by May 2023. The facility will be built as a basement with concrete walls to make sure no insects escape out into the environment, Jepson says. The company's long-term goal is to construct a greenhouse complex on top of the site. The company began advancing this project in 2019 in part because it reached capacity with its existing insectary on the third floor of its RTP campus. Jepson says the company, which used to focus on corn, now also works with soybeans, which presents additional insect species to control. The company has also put more of an emphasis on insect control, reflected in the 85 people hired to work at the RTP campus over the last year, many of whom will utilize this new facility. At a high level, the company tries to improve crop varieties for growers around the world, Jepson says. The company does this through genetic modifications, gene editing, or traditional breeding techniques. The company develops proteins that kill specific insects while ignoring ladybugs or earthworms when they take a bite out of a plant, but there are species of insects who have become resistant to some of these techniques. Using this insectary, the company plans to develop new methods of controlling these insects. What we're here to do now is develop the next generation of insect control technology, Jepson says. And we'll end today with the Business Pulse survey. Are you considering refinancing your mortgage? Total number of responses, 657. 64% say no, satisfied with my current situation. 22% have financed within the past year. And 9% don't own their homes, while 5% say yes. And we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.